Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in this week. At the moment, there are a lot of moving parts to the military's personnel system. Defense Secretary Ash Carter, of course, has his Force of the Future initiative, as we've discussed before, some of which he's announced. Other complicated bits are still awaiting more study. But inside and outside the Pentagon, there is broad agreement that at least the mechanics of managing military personnel is long overdue for change. A fair number of the military's personnel transactions still happen via paper forms. Other elements that have been computerized aren't particularly useful from an enterprise perspective, since many of those systems serve just one purpose and don't communicate with each other. On this week's show, we hear about the Army's plan to change that. Colonel Darby McNulty is the project manager for the Army's Integrated Personnel and Pay System, an ambitious five-year effort to consolidate dozens of HR systems, improve the Army's talent management, and get its payroll systems in order for a financial audit. We talked in his office in Alexandria, Virginia.
We currently use 43 different systems to do personnel and pay operations in the United States Army today. So we have a lot of disjointed business processes. We have a lot of problems with our data in the Army because there's multiple databases in play. But from a top level, the power that an integrated personnel and pay system brings to the Army is that, number one, it's the same single system for all the soldiers in the Army. So right now, we have different processes in each of the different components. So the Army National Guard, the U.S. Army Reserves, the active component of the Army all use different personnel systems, and those are all different inputs into the pay system that DFAS runs and runs quite well today. So at a top level, we'll have one Army. So one system to do personnel and pay, and pay should be the centerpiece of a modern HR system, and it is in most of the modern HR systems that are deployed, you know, not just in the government, but within the industry, within the commercial space. So an integrated single system is huge to the Army versus 43 disparate systems. Number two, it gives us an ability to manage talent in the Army. When you can bring all of those soldiers into a single system, bring all of the key data elements into a single database, and then link it not just with the transactional environment, and I'll talk a little later about the products we're using to build this thing, mm-hmm. but if you can have your transactional environment, you know, in a single environment, and then link that to the business intelligence applications that you can bring to bear, you really can bring some powerful tools and analytics to the Army. The other piece is that, you know, we're going to use a five-tiered, you know, HR help desk, using a customer relations module, a CRM package that will allow the help desk to be connected and integrated to the transactional environment. So if you can bring not just a single integrated transactional environment, but you can bring business intelligence and a help desk linked into that environment and then authoritative data, then we can really manage talent in the United States Army. And then, so those are the first two big pieces, a single system, one Army, ability to better manage talent in the United States Army, and then number three, bringing a very robust auditability capability to the United States Army. When you have to run single audits on 43 different systems, where you don't always have authoritative or correct data, then it makes the ability to do audit. So audit, this is a big part. You know, payroll for the United States Army is, I believe, roughly 40% of the Army's top line. We are about people. So having the control measures in there to pay people accurately, correctly, and then have the auditability on top of it is powerful.
Yeah, and let's stick with the integration piece for a minute if we can. Beyond just integrating Guard, Active Reserve, maybe you can say a word about what it means, what we mean when we say integrating pay and personnel, because those are, or pre-IPSA, those are two separate universes, right, with a lot of manual work in between.
Right. So what we have today is, you know, we have a very robust human resources capability. I mean, we have very good people doing very good work in the Army, but they're using disparate systems to do personnel. And then we have a very good capability at DFAS across all the services. You know, they have a great team there. They do great things, but they get inputs from all these different personnel systems, you know, across the department that allows them to then generate what military pay is. You know, if you look at a modern human resource system, compensation is the centerpiece of that system. So if we can calculate payroll within the HR system. And then we're doing personnel actions within that transactional environment. I'll give you an example. So let's say I'm private first class McNulty and I'm going to get promoted to specialist, right? And so my number comes up. There's a personnel action that has to happen in a, you know, in a separate system, and then there has to be a transaction from the personnel side of the fence to the HR, you know, and we still use a lot of forms, and we digitally sign some things, but it's got to be delivered from personnel people to pay people. So if that doesn't happen in a timely and accurate manner, which it doesn't all the time, then I don't get paid. So then you put the human aspect on this. I'm now specialist McNulty. I'm still getting paid as a private first class. I'm married and I have 3 children and I just came back from a deployment, you know. So anything we can do to better integrate all of the personnel and pay will absolutely have a very powerful impact and a positive impact on our soldiers and their family members.
Yeah, just to highlight that accuracy point, getting ready for this interview, I went back through a story I wrote about 3 years ago. And at that time, GAO had just asked the Army, how many soldiers did you have on active duty in 2011? And it took the Army 3 months to figure out the answer. And yet instances of soldiers moving back and forth between active and reserve and not getting paid for months at a time. How far have we come since then on data correctness and reliability? Are we having some of those same challenges today after you've started to roll out IPSA?
Sure. We have some of those problems still to this day. In fact, we have most of those problems today. That's why we really need this capability. Mm-hmm. So it's in some cases, it's not a question of data accuracy or correctness. It's a question of using different systems. So if you go from the Guard or Reserve onto the, you know, into active duty, it's kind of like you have to rebuild the $6 million man. So you have to go, because those systems are different, you have to go build the soldiers' data into the active duty systems. And then when you go back, you have to do some of the reverse. So it's still to this day as people go between, and it's one of the reasons this is going to be so powerful. You know, we're in the midst, and this is probably the most powerful thing we got out of Increment 1. Is it really gave us a dipstick down into the quality of data in the United States Army. So I can, you know, my team, along with my functional teammates, we use that, and we're in the midst of a 2 to 3 year data correctness campaign. So when we did Increment 1 and we did the, you know, the machine-to-machine transfers from 15 different disparate systems into IPSA Increment 1 and into a database, you know, we were able to see the quality of about 300 different data elements in the Army. And what we were able to quickly see is, in some cases, we have multiple data sources for the same thing. You know, so a soldier twice a year takes a physical training test, you know, does push-ups, sit-ups, and 2 miles. And so that information is used for a variety of things. So it's used in concert with your annual evaluation, you know, from an HR standpoint. It's used for whether you're subject to favorable or unfavorable actions based on whether you passed it or not. But my point is you can enter that data into about 8 different places in the Army today. And it is authoritative to different people for different things. So you can see the opportunity for data fratricide to be, you know, kind of alive and well there. So we're really using Increment 1 as a mechanism, and we're working this very closely with DFAS and the financial management folks for the Army and with Human Resources Command to determine what the authoritative sources are versus the most convenient source. And we've got some work to do.
Colonel Darby McNulty is the project manager for the Army's Integrated Personnel and Pay System. We'll come back and hear more about the status of that 5-year project after our first break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Our guest this week is Colonel Darby McNulty, the project manager for the Army's Integrated Personnel and Pay System. As we've been discussing, IPSA will bring together 43 different stovepiped human resource systems from across the active Army, National Guard, and the Army Reserve between now and 2020.
Before we get too much further, we should tell people where we are in the overall program. You mentioned some of the goodness that came out of Increment 1. I think you're a little ways into Increment 2 now. Talk about some of the other things that happened during Increment 1, what you got out of it, and what's happening in Increment 2, if you would.
Okay, sure. So for Increment 1, we're fully deployed. We've deployed the Increment 1 capability to 1.1 million soldiers. And for the first time, we actually have a database that has about 300 different data elements in it for all three components. You know, we're not transactional yet, but again, when you're going to build one of these big enterprise network programs, having good data is absolutely critical to the success of the program. So that's fully deployed, and now we're using that as a mechanism, as I said, to improve the quality of the data in the Army in advance of IPSAY Increment 2. IPSAY Increment 2 will be the transactional system that will do all the personnel operations, all the pay operations for the Army. We hit a milestone B, which in plain English speak is the event that allows you to award a big contract to a systems integrator. In December of 2014, we went to a protest for about 5 months. We successfully worked our way through that and awarded the contract to CACI to be the systems integrator. They're partnered with about 20 or 25 different partners from industry to do that. Accenture is one of the bigger ones that's teamed with them, but there's a bunch of them. And so we're in the phase now where we conducted a successful systems requirements review a couple months ago. Next month, mid-February, we're doing a systems functional review. And what that basically allows us to do is say, these are our requirements. This is all of the capabilities we want. This is the functionality that the system will deliver. And I added those to the schedule leading up to the milestone B a year ago. I feel that it's critical to lock down the requirements and the desired functionality and then baseline the contract. So that'll be the next thing that's coming up is an integrated baseline review. So that we baseline the contract, and that contract that's baseline reflects what we want.
Has the program decided on an underlying software product yet, or does that happen after you get a good baseline of those requirements?
Yeah, so we've decided the major products we're going to use, and they're largely Oracle-based. If you look at some of the other Army enterprise systems, you know, in the logistics and in the financial management community, they're SAP based. We on the human resource side are going to be Oracle based. We're going to use Oracle PeopleSoft, which has got a human capital module and a global payroll module built into it. We're going to use Oracle Business Intelligence as our business intelligence layer to this, and then we're going to use Oracle CRM product to provide a five-tiered approach to customer support. We're also part of a larger Army effort. This was kind of a corporate decision to move all of the ERPs over the next several years into the DISA deck into an ERP enclave so we can get to an environment that we all want to get to where we're using common hardware and common software and to get our data better federated. So bringing all this, and we're going to all be using Oracle superclusters, the M632s from Oracle. And then there's a number of other products that we'll use. People tend to go right after the PeopleSoft part of this, but clearly business intelligence, CRM for your help desk stuff. And then, you know, we're going to have a GRC, you know, governance rules and compliance, a couple pieces of software sitting on top of this that will allow us to develop a better auditability, you know, capability to do an audit.
Let's stick with that DISA piece for a second. They've been talking lately about the stand-up of what they're calling, I guess, a center of excellence for ERPs to help the services do some of that integration and understand the underlying business processes. So I guess the main objective really is to eliminate some of the redundancy and capability that you're providing to all those different ERPs, right? Can you say a little bit from your perspective how mature that effort is, what you've gotten out of it, what you think the potential is for wringing out redundancy between all these different Oracle systems within the HR world and SAP and the rest of the world?
Yeah, so the first piece of your question, you know, and I actually, before I came to this program, I was the deputy director for acquisition management under Dr. Sproul up at OSD. So, you know, some of this goes back about 2 years ago where Mr. Kendall and Dr. Jost and DCMO and some of the others up at OSD were talking about, you know, how do we get to an environment where we do have a center of excellence. How do we, you know, better run these programs? You know, how do we find efficiencies across the department? So he's done a number of things He stood up the overarching integrated product team up at OSD that handles these defense business systems so that they were all bundled in the same portfolios. They've hosted a couple days where they've brought in all the senior program management for the larger programs across the services to collaborate and to share information. So that's a good news story. So I'd say good progress. It's still fairly early. You know, the talk of setting up a center of excellence just started not too long ago. So I'm seeing evidence that it's starting to take legs. And I think it's a good thing. You know, the first big whole day we spent with all the PMs across all the services, just, you know, talking about what's going well, what's not going well, you know, what's working with your products versus what's not working. You know, I think that collaboration is essential. So I'm starting to see some good evidence.
Good. I'd like to circle back on the data reliability effort that you're in the middle of. I think you're asking individual soldiers to help you with that as they look at their own records, correct? And I wonder, as you've gone through that process, what you've found in those 15 functional databases that you've gone through so far, what sort of quality issues have you found, and do you foresee a major effort to get that cleaned up before you start moving into transactional data in Inc. 2?
Yeah, I mean, the person who's really the maybe data czar is a strong word, but the person who's responsible for the quality of data in the Army is actually down at Human Resources Command, which is where it should be. So the Adjutant General, Brigadier General Iacocca, and his organization are the folks that sort of are the implementing agency to improve the quality of data in the Army. So there was really, when we looked at Increment 1, there was probably 70 or 80 opportunities to make improvements in the data in the Army. And so some of it, the cause of the data problems, you know, is varied. In some cases, we just simply hadn't designated authoritative data sources. And so you could pick what your preference was, depending on what you were doing, you know, as your source of data. So we've literally developed a spreadsheet, you know, of a couple thousand data elements. It's enough to, you know, suck the life out of you just looking at the spreadsheet, but it's important. So we've listed out all these, you know, data elements and said, all right, this is going to be the authoritative source. This is the owner of that data. So again, this is not something that's going to happen overnight. It's going to take a couple years. So I don't know if that kind of gets at what you're talking to.
It does. Was what I said a second ago about individual soldiers having some role in going in and verifying the accuracy of their own data somewhat accurate? And how's that going to play out? What are you asking them to do?
Right. So, you know, in Increment 1, that's a good question. We did go out and say, you know, all right, this is your integrated record brief for this IPSA Increment 1. And so we asked them questions about the quality of the data. Is it accurate? Is it correct? And that gave us, again, insight into what we needed to know, which is you can't fix a problem until you know what it is, right? So we've characterized the problem. And so we've probably, we're probably about 30% of the way in. We've made some really good strides into improving the quality of the data. But again, we've got a long way to go. So as part of a pre-deployment effort, that'll obviously be on the critical path that, you know, as we field state by state, territory by territory in the Army National Guard, you know, that'll be part of a pre-deployment checklist to have each individual soldier not just review but fix the things that need to be fixed. But you don't want to ask 1.1 million soldiers across the entire United States Army and all their commanders to do these sit-down reviews until we've set the conditions for that to be successful. The worst thing we can ask someone to do is review all their records and then not be able to fix the problems. So again, we're working very closely with Human Resources Command to set those conditions over the next 2 years so that when we go to deploy IPSA, you know, the environment will be good to do that.
And how long is it going to take before we have a functional capability where we can say that we truly have integrated pay and personnel across the Army? Soldiers can see their own records and it's all in one user-friendly interface.
And they're getting paid from it.
And they're getting paid correctly.
Right. Yeah. So it's a 5-year program. We're going to start with the Army National Guard systems, so we collapse the systems they use today into IPS into a single system, and then we're going to move on to the personnel systems for the active component and then the U.S. Army Reserves. And what we want to do is get all of the personnel functionality built into IPS before we tackle global payroll. So get all the personnel, because, you know, personnel inputs drive 95% of what your end of month or your mid-month pay is for a soldier. I mean, what rank you are, where you live, what your housing is, you know, how long you've been in, what sort of special skills you have, and that's really the determination of, you know, how much money you make at the end of 2 weeks or at the end of the month. So we've got to get that correct, and then we can turn on global payroll. So, you know, we'll start with the Army National Guard and start deploying that in 18, and we'll finish up the personnel systems in 19, and then 19 and 20 is when we turn on global payroll. So I often get, you know, asked the question is, why does it take so long? Is, well, we're using 43 different systems, and there's hundreds and hundreds of interfaces back behind these different transactional environments. And so when we fully turn on IPSA increment 2, there's going to be about 120 external interfaces to this single integrated system. The good news is we're going to turn off about 300 interfaces because we've, you know, streamlined the environment. So to build that and then to train it and deploy it across, you know, all, you know, we're a pretty dispersed organization in the United States Army, mm-hmm. so that takes time. So sometimes I get the question that how come it's taking so long, and, you know, my answer back is, do we want to do this right? And if we're going to do it right, we need to take the time to be successful and to set the conditions so we are. So that's the timeline. It's going to be, to my knowledge, the largest implementation of PeopleSoft ever.
That's Colonel Darby McNulty, the project manager for the Army's Integrated Personnel and Pay System. More on the challenges of creating a single integrated pay and personnel system for the entire Army, active, guard, and reserve, after another quick break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servian. Thanks for listening to federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. This is On DoD. We're talking this week with Colonel Darby McNulty, the project manager for the Army's Integrated Personnel and Pay System. His job is to build a single IT system out of more than 40 others that currently handle pay and personnel for the National Guard, the Army Reserve, and the Army's active component. The project, once it's finished in 2020, will be the largest HR enterprise resource planning system in the world.
Back to your point about why this is hard, as I understand it, this has been an objective for the Army, that is, integrating pay and personnel since roughly the 70s. DoD tried and failed to do it in the 2000s with dimers. Why are things different this time? What do you think the keys are to success, to getting it right, as opposed to why it hasn't gotten done up until this point?
There's probably about 7 or 8 layers to the question.
We could do an hour on that question, I'm sure.
No, but you're right. So I think a couple things have changed. You know, and this wasn't just unique to the, you know, enterprise network systems. You know, there's been trials and tribulations across all the domains. Dimers was just one across all the services. I don't think any of these things have ever been implemented, you know, in the first swing at it. But I think one of the things, some of the things that are important to make sure these types of programs are successful. And, you know, the Army's making good progress. We've actually fielded GFEBs and G Army and LMP, for, you know, so our wholesale and retail logistics and our financial management is in successfully deployed programs. So I think we've cracked the code on a couple things. One is you really need to baseline your requirements and the functionality you want, right? So, and that's what I kind of hit earlier, is before we baseline the contract and just get into it, let's make sure we understand what it is we want to do. That's one. Number two, this is a complete team sport, right? So if you have disconnects between the functional community, the program manager on the government side, and then your industry teammates, if you can't collaborate and work effectively together, then you're going to have problems, you know. So we've co-located. So everyone who's doing anything on this program is doing it right here out of this building in Alexandria. Not to say we don't have a huge number of important stakeholders externally. We do. But we're building the program here, and we're co-located. Some of the earlier ERPs across the services, you know, there was an attempt to, like, what we like to call boil the ocean. Right. And so maybe we got to start with a large lake before we get to the ocean. Right. And so I think that's important. So, and then the third thing is you've got to have a commercial product that can actually support what, you know, you want to do. So a lot of the early ERPs, dimers being one of them, went, you know, were driven to some pretty significant customization. You know, so as best as you can stay away from going in and mucking around with the back end software code of these things, and take advantage of the capabilities that come out of the box with some of these commercial products, the better you are. So industry's also done some great things to better enable us to do that. So if you take the PeopleSoft product, you know, they just recently did an upgrade from 9.1 to 9.2. And I won't get into the techno speak, but the big thing that changed is they completely overhauled the front end user interface and the user experience. The source code that runs the engine stayed the same, but it was just dramatic improvements to the front end user interface so that you can configure versus customize things. And that keeps you away from doing these big bang software block, kind of like we used to do and still do, you know, where every 2 or 3 years you get everyone kind of all rise when the new software block's coming in, and it's this huge, long, emotional event. You know, a parallel example is you get notified on your personal device there's an upgrade. So you accept it, right, apply it. And then, I also have an iPhone and an iPad government issue that I use, right? And I don't immediately accept that, but what the government does is some regression testing to make sure that we're, you know, the cybersecurity requirements are met and it doesn't, you know, disconnect anything else we're doing. But so a month goes by and I accept it, but that's light years beyond where we were. So you wouldn't want to just do, because we're not running a furniture shop, we're in the Army and we've got some pretty sensitive stuff that we need to check. But things are happening quicker. And so that's a big thing. So that if you can configure the front end user experience and the software allows you to do it, so it's Army-ized, if you will. I know that's not an exact word, but it is in the Army. And you have a lot more flexible tool to set things up. The other piece is we've really made some strides with the business intelligence products, not just from Oracle, that are available for people to use today. So that if you can access the data, right, then it is easy in a business intelligence product to kind of customize the reports you want to do, the tools and analytics, the forecasting, but don't do it in your transactional environment. So I think those are some big things. And then all the reporting that comes out of these things and the ability to sift through data, that has really improved in these commercial products. So again, those are the three big things: people, you know, defining what they want to build, working well together, and then trying not to customize the commercial products.
Yeah, and on that third one, the customization, I mean, I think that's one of the lessons that we've heard from the deployment of basically any ERP throughout DoD, is that if you're going to make sure you don't bankrupt the program, you know, shape your own business processes so that they suit the software, or at least align with the underlying commercial software instead of the other way around. And I wonder to what extent that's already begun to happen in the Army's functional HR worlds, where they're learning to integrate this commercial product into their world rather than trying to alter the commercial software so that it suits 40-year-old business processes.
Right. Yeah. So we spent a lot of time over the last year building a demo box, if you will. And it doesn't sound like, and it's not intended to, you know, to sell the program or oversell the program, but it's an intent to show all those external stakeholders and those key functional customers what this thing could look like in the future. I'll call it a hybrid agile development methodology. You know, we have to build this thing too, so there's some very disciplined engineering that needs to happen. So clearly you need to do design reviews to make sure your infrastructure, your hardware and your software and all that's coming together, you're meeting the cyber requirements. So that kind of harkens to, you know, very disciplined engineering. Not to say Agile is not disciplined, but for the software pieces to build the features and to bring the, you know, run the sprints and bring the scrums, we intended to use an Agile methodology. And we want to do that to get after exactly what you're talking about, is we want to show it to the user, and then we want to show it to them again, and then we want to show it to them again, right? You like this? You don't like this? What do you want us to tweak? So if we can, so that starts with a demo environment, and then it moves into a pre-prototype and a prototype environment, then in the detailed development. And then, you know, for something like this, shame on us if we get to our first big operational test and we should be completely confident when we get to that point, if we do what I'm talking about, that we've built something that the user wants.
Yeah, and have buy-in from the users, right, hopefully by that point. We haven't really gotten into talent management. You touched on it earlier, but I mean, it's obviously a big element of the Secretary's Force of the Future initiative, the whole idea of being able to use big data analytics to crunch the data you've already got, figure out where people's individual talents lie, and make smarter decisions about every soldier you've got. And so to what extent does IPSA actually get you there, or at least lay the foundation for that kind of capability.
Yes, I wouldn't want to get completely ahead of the group that's doing the Force of the Future, but I can tell you we've had several sessions with them. There's a task force that was just stood up in the Army to do talent management, and they put a 2-star in charge of it. So they're looking at what are the things we can do immediately. So they're out there looking at, there's some things that can be improved, long before we fully deploy IPSA. And so I don't want to speak for the task force. We are a team member on that task force.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some things that the Army wants to do, but this thing called IPSA is going to be the big enabler. And how do you do talent management? Well, it's about data, right? So once we get 1.1 million soldiers across all three components built into a trusted foundation, there's probably about 3,000 data elements we're going to have on a soldier. So that we're able to get all the unique attributes and skills and talents of these young men and women coming into the Army, whether it's enlisted or officer, as far left as possible, and get all that data into a single database. PeopleSoft has these incredibly powerful search fields built into it. So you can say, I'm looking at all these different person and non-person attributes, and say, I'm looking for these 5 things, right? And then you can run a search almost instantaneously, depending on how, wide you're casting a net, and it'll match the people to the attributes. It's those non-traditional things that maybe only recruiters may know about or commanders may, if you can get that into the system, and you got to tag it, not everyone needs to see some of this information. But if you know that some young lady coming into the Army grew up on a farm in Iowa and has operated 16 different pieces of heavy machinery for 20 years, right? That's probably some interesting information to know about someone, right? Fast forward, you're deployed doing assistance in some country, right? And that's a pretty powerful skill to have in some places like that. So if you knew that when you were trying to build your team to go to deployment, that'd be pretty powerful. Another example is, I need someone who's got electrical skills but speaks this language because this group of people is going to perform some important mission somewhere. That may take a long time, and often you may get into a situation where someone gets hurt before you figure all that out. So I think IPSA is going to be this huge thing that's going to enable us to do talent management.
Yeah. And so who would have access to that kind of search capability? And for instance, would that be available to the joint world? I'm thinking of an example maybe where Cyber Command is looking for a very specific skill set of, maybe there's 5 people in the entire military that have that. Can they potentially access IPSA to help them find that within the Army?
Yeah. So when you look at all the different, combatant commanders and where they're doing operations, there's the... all the services are represented in the human resource community. So there will be people at each one of those joint staffs that has certain network roles and permissions. So we haven't fully determined those because we're just at the system functionality review. But as we get further into this, we're going to assign very specific roles and permissions to the people in the system. And obviously it's got to be based on a need to know and a need to do. But we'll set those up so the right people can do exactly what you're talking about.
Colonel Darby McNulty is the project manager for the Army's Integrated Personnel and Pay System. We'll come back and talk more about the program's long-term objectives after one last break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servio. We're back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Servio. The Army has 1.1 million soldiers, some of them in the National Guard, some in the Reserve, some in the active force, and until now there have been more than 40 systems that handle their personnel records and their pay. We're talking this week with Colonel Darby McNulty, who's in charge of bringing those systems together under the umbrella of what the Army calls its Integrated Personnel and Pay System.
I don't want to run out of time before we talk about audit readiness, because it's a really key piece of what you're after here. Fair to say that the Army really can't be audit ready until you get integrated pay and personnel and get off of these 40 stovepipe systems with bad data and non-integrated data?
I don't want to speak for the Army. I think the Army would say that we're going to be audit ready and by the agreed to time. I think they have a plan to do that.
Sure, and I'm not trying to get you to alter the Army's commitment to audit readiness.
I got you.
My real question is, what's IPSA's overall contribution and importance to that much broader effort that goes beyond people?
It's big. it's big, you know. It's not just the military pay. It's the auditability of all the personnel inputs, and you know, because there's a personnel and a pay side of the audit, and getting all of our data into authoritative sources, into a single database, to a single transactional environment, with the auditability features like GRC and GRC Manager sitting on top of this, I think will go a long way to being able to do an audit. If you look at people that perform the roles of, you know, Inspector General and other top of the system people that need to get access to a lot of information, you know, we're going to be a big enabler of that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of taking a step backwards into stuff we've already covered, but I did want to ask you, it seems like a lot of this to me is automating a lot of manual processes that you're doing right now. And so I wonder, do we know how much manual labor we're eliminating once all is said and done? Have you gamed that out, whether that's in terms of man hours or FTEs or anything else?
Yeah, so when you do one of these big programs, you do an economic analysis and look at the benefits of what you're doing and a return on investment. So some of the biggest ticket things that we're going to get out of IPSA aren't currently monetized. You know, you can't. I mean, you could quantify them,
but
and some things are intangible. So I can tell you, having been a commander in the Army, having been a personnel person, we waste an enormous amount of time doing manual processes. I mean, we use lots of forms. Some of those forms can be filled out with a pen or pencil still. Some of them we digitally sign. So if you can get all this into a single transactional environment with built-in workflow and notifications, and it's huge. And then the other part is we spend an enormous amount of time like generating products on a predetermined kind of timeline. Big, huge, painful PowerPoint briefings, and so what happens today, and it's true in a lot of places in life, is you cobble all this data into these different Excel spreadsheets and access databases, and I call it doing cheetah flips, right? You go through about 6 or 7 gyrations of trying to get the data organized, and then you put it into PowerPoint, and then you go see your boss, and they're like, that's not quite what I'm looking for, right? So if you when you have an integrated transactional environment, it generates your stuff for you versus generating stuff to generate more stuff, if that makes sense. And we spent a huge amount of time. The other thing is stuff gets lost. If your leave form doesn't get processed all the way through the pipeline and sent to DFAS, then you're not charged leave, right? And it's not because people are doing bad things. Stuff gets lost. Stuff happens, right? So, and even if we just broke even, when you look at the numbers for this program, we're going to spend just as much whether we do this or not. And there's about 1 million reasons to do this. So we're all pretty excited. It's pretty complicated. We got a lot of work to do, but we're pretty excited about this thing.
Good. Your sister services are all on similar journeys as you are, trying to integrate their own personnel and pay systems. Coast Guard, for example, I think has already been running PeopleSoft for a few years now. And so if you can just say a bit about what y'all are learning from each other as you're all basically trying to do the same things.
Right. So there's a service group, and it brings in some of the, not just the three services, but people from, like the Coast Guard and from Defense Logistics and a couple other things. But there's a forum where, at the PEO level, the Program Executive Office level, at the two-star level, where quarterly the services come together and they talk about things that are going well, things that aren't going well. We share a lot of information. So we are on slightly different paths. We all have the same desired end state to get to an environment where our pay and personnel are integrated.
Just to finish up here, talk a bit about some of the fundamental reasons we're doing this in the first place. I mean, we're not building an IT system just to build an IT system or to give the HR community fancier toys to play with to do their jobs better. Talk a bit about what this is in the end going to mean for individual soldiers, families across the Army.
Yes, that's a great question. We kind of reworked our mission and vision statement around here about 1.5 years ago when I came in and took over the program. And your question goes exactly where we were going about 1.5 years ago. Is obviously we need to get to an integrated personnel and pay system in a single system. Allows us to do talent management and everything. But what we're really building is something that's going to improve the quality of life for our soldiers and their family members. We ask our soldiers and their families to do quite a bit. They deserve to have the very best. And the Army's about people. So that's number one mission. Number two is you know, we all work for commanders and leaders in the Army, so we need to give them tools that enable them to conduct mission command, to lead their organizations, and to take care of their people. And then, obviously, we need to improve the systems that the HR professionals are using in the Army. So, but oftentimes we treat these things along functional lines, and clearly we got to give the HR community a better system to use. But this is really about soldiers first, and then commanders and leaders. And you know, and in order to do that, and to make it, you know, to satisfy that mission, we, and this goes to our vision for this product, is anytime you have a capability that's good, you know, generally speaking, it does four or five things. It's easy to use. It's reliable. It's well trained. It's adaptive to the needs of the user. And since this is a network system, it needs to be secure, right? And so I'm convinced if we can do those five things for those three groups of people, we're going to have a winning capability.
All right, Colonel, that's a great way to end. Thanks again for talking with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Colonel Darby McNulty is the project manager for the Army's Integrated Personnel and Pay System, or IPPS-A. If you missed any of our conversation, we'll post the entire show, as always, at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Jared Servio. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.